Hello there, lollygaggers. Another week on tap here at Lollygagging Sports. I am Bo Reed along with Samantha Button and Matthew Irby. We are very much post trade deadline. We're getting into those good old fashioned pennant races. So we're gonna be chatting about some of that. But first let me check in on my team here. Samantha, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm watching a guy run 110 hurdles right now who looks like a person who doesn't know how to run hurdles, like with the stutter step, but he just won his heat. So I'm like, all right, man, like whatever works for you. Wild stuff.
All right, Irby, how about you?
Well, now I want to run hurdles.
Really?
Are you sure?
No. What? You guys know me. What? I love the Olympics. I love my Olympics. I wish I could get out there and compete. You know, me and Andrew Chapin would love to ski and shoot stuff. I would never do hurdles.
I just want to know how hurdles actually became a thing. Like what psychopaths sat there and looked at a track and said, you know, it'd be fun. Let's put things in the way for people to jump over. How did this happen?
If you think that's bad, how did we get to steeplechase? Like, it's not now it's not enough to have something in the way. It's now there needs to be a pit behind it.
Yeah. We're going to make you jump in water. Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, and there's hurdles. Oh, like the hurdles that I grew up in? No. This is a really long hurdle.
A little bigger.
A little bit bigger. And is it like supposed to mess up my rhythm? Oh no, let's find out. And we just do one lap. No, it's a 3,000.
Could you imagine? My hurdling experience is quite limited, but I have run the like 300 hurdles, which let me tell you, feels like running 17 miles, even though it's not even a full lap around the track. You want to die by the time you get into that. And these dudes are jumping over something taller with a pit behind it for 3,000 meters. I don't know.
You know what's the weird thing about steeplechase? Is they don't do it in the first lap.
Well, you got to get warmed up, Irby.
Like, really?
Down.
I guess that's it. Like, y'all can do this 11 times. Oh, just 11? Yeah, 12 is just too much. Like, that's ridiculous. Let's just let you have one free lap. Oh, like you're giving us hope or something.
But how do you think they arrived at that? Like, at some point, was it 12 and someone died and they were like, all right, 11.
That would be great to know that. So why is it 11 to the 12? We had a drowning. Oh. Isn't it like 6 inches deep? Yep. Okay.
Well, it's like the diving, right? The platform diving. Like that, I was watching that and I was like thinking back to like when you are like an unsupervised child in like a college rec facility and like they have that little like thing that locks over the 10-meter platform. Like you cannot get up there because you will absolutely like break bone if you jump off that and you don't know what you're doing. But you know what you can't do? Jump off the 7.5-meter platform. Like who figured out that 7.5 meters, totally okay to just let unsupervised children just leap off of that with no training, but 10 meters, too far.
It's
so
too
like
much.
Who suffered the broken back in between 7.5 and 10 where they determined? Amazing.
And why did we stop at 10? Do you think they were, let's go to 12.
Do you think that was where they all just died? Like 12? Like they just all died? So I was like, okay, no, can't do that. Olympics.
So while we're on this subject here of the Olympics, before we get into baseball, I need one of you, like, speed walking. What exactly is the strategy for this?
No.
I need someone to explain the strategy of how would you approach speed walking?
I wouldn't, because I refuse to recognize this as a sport.
I just think, because I saw the video of the one who was celebrating a little too early and got lapped, but
it's the stupidest thing.
What is the maybe just explain the rules, like what constitutes walking versus light jogging?
What's the radar on an RV? Is it 3 miles an hour that you can't exceed?
Yes,
I think it's 3 miles an hour.
There has to be a foot touching the ground at all points.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why it's the motion. If you watch the foot motion, like that's where I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't be able to pull that off. Like I have to be, okay, no. And I, Bo, you want my strategy on it? You can go ahead and cue up a soundbite for it. Oh. Personally?
Man, I didn't have that ready. Damn.
That's okay. That's okay. It's speed walking. We got time. I got 20. I saw that same video. You know what's the problem I have with that? It's, I mean, one, I don't feel too bad of like, don't celebrate, you know, before. But two, it's literally a sport where we just talked about the speed. Like, you couldn't have just tilted your head for a second and be like, is there anyone within 10 feet of me? No? Okay, I can celebrate. Like, it's not like this girl, like, that. What was it, the mixed relay that we saw where the Netherlands girl just came out of nowhere and passed the American. Like, that's just world-class sprinter beating a teenager. Here, like, she didn't come out of nowhere. Like, you just turn your head and realize, oh, you're right next to me. Maybe I shouldn't celebrate yet. Let me just do my last five steps. But she didn't. So you didn't get it.
I can only speak to this from the like track / cross country strategy, which is that you are never, ever, ever to look behind you, ever, for many reasons, some of which are about efficiency that might not apply to speed walking, but many of which are psychological. You are never to turn around. Like, you ask somebody watching the race how close the next person is behind you before you turn your head. So we were taught explicitly not to do that. So I don't know if that applies to speed walking as well, but perhaps that's why.
You were probably also taught, don't grab a flag and put it around your neck and celebrate before you've actually finished the race.
We were not permitted to celebrate at all under any circumstances. So, no. There will be no having of the flag. Now, I'd be happy about this. This is your job, 14-year-old. Really, really healthy training environment for high school kids, sure. But yes, no, I feel very confident I would not have made that mistake.
Okay, Irby, I found it.
Personally, I think it's crap.
Took me a second. But I still, I wanted to get that out there. Okay. although, came across another one. Do you think she was thinking about this when she was celebrating?
I got a jar of dirt. I got a jar of dirt. What's inside it?
Nothing, because you celebrated too soon.
Get a jar of dirt.
All right, I think that's enough Olympics. Samantha, you want to kick off the baseball portion of the show?
Sure. Why not? Weird transition. Speaking of not getting a jar of dirt, or at least not getting one yet, the Orioles.
Uh-oh.
Terrible transition. We need to talk about this, right? Like, are the Orioles just in a bad patch? Are they fading? I don't know what's going on. We've seen a lot of this, you know, New York, Baltimore, Cleveland, Philly. These were the four teams at the top, and they have all faded significantly, although New York appears to be creeping back, and the others appear to be continuing to fade. So the Orioles now in a situation where, as of they are playing right now, so this will change by the time you guys hear this, but right now, you know, they're one back of New York. They're tied with Cleveland. The West is way behind. But I guess a lot of what I wanted to talk to you guys about with regard to the Orioles is, like, are we worried about these guys, first of all? Are we worried about them? Not so much in are they going to make the playoffs, because I think for any of these teams, they would have to just have an absolute disaster to not make the playoffs. But are you worried about them falling out of the division race? Are you worried about them falling out of the 1 and 2 spots and not getting the bye, especially considering that they've already, you know, they won the season series against Seattle, so that's not going to be an issue. Also, I don't think the West is going to be part of the tiebreaker scenarios at all, but they lost the season series to Cleveland. So should they tie with Cleveland record-wise at the end, they will lose that. And New York, obviously, TBD, they still have too many games to play there. We don't know. We don't even know between them and Houston. But, like, I don't know. Are we worried about this? Does it even matter? I mean, we saw how the bye kind of hurt them a year ago. Like, maybe they're better off without it. But, like, how worried are you about these guys, especially considering they spent big at the trade deadline? And so far, it's not looking like that's working out terribly well for them.
You know, I think the jury's still out on this. I mean, it's concerning that I think that the downturn has lasted as long as it has. It's kind of, it's kind of like with the Yankees, you know, the first couple of weeks of you're like, well, you know, everyone has a downturn, but then it reached into week four. And at that point, we were starting to wonder, are the Yankees going to pull out of it? And they are at the moment. It looks like they are starting to come back to life. I think Baltimore would do the same. In terms of the playoffs, I think Baltimore is one of those teams that had a very disappointing end last year, and that's going to motivate them, I would say, going into October. So it's one of those teams, I don't really think they care where they are. As long as they're in the playoffs and they can make a run, they're just going to do what they're going to do. So I'm not too concerned about Baltimore yet, but you know, if this tailspin doesn't right itself soon, I'm going to start becoming concerned.
Yeah, well, and I think for what it's worth, you know, they're 6-4 in their last 10, so they have righted the ship a little bit. But they did have a significant lead there, and I think, you know, losing the season series to Cleveland is maybe not great. And like you said, maybe they don't care about the seeding, maybe they don't care about the bye. I mean, it does cost you home field, which does matter. In baseball playoffs, that matters a lot, much more than it does in any other sport, because you get to bat last. So, you know, that's a little concerning. You know, the head-to-head with New York, too, you know, might come into play as well. I don't know.
You know, the one thing they're probably regretting right now, though, is they had an opportunity to really bury New York.
Yes.
And they didn't do it. So I think that would be the one thing about Baltimore that I would certainly see as a regret. But look, I mean, look, they're still, what, 20 games over 500? They're a good 6-week close the season away from winning the AL East. I mean, I still think they're going to win the AL East. I don't think it's going to be the Yankees. But they need to get back to playing like they did back in May and June.
Yeah, well, and I think you make a good point about how far over 500 they are, too, because we're seeing this. I'm seeing people melt down in Baltimore. I'm seeing people melt down in Cleveland. And it's like, you guys.
Yeah.
They built such a big lead that, like, the worst case scenario is they fall back into one of the top wild card spots. Like, neither of these teams is getting put out of the playoffs. They're way too far ahead for that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I agree with you. I think Baltimore had a really good opportunity to just absolutely bury New York and didn't do it. Irby, where are you at? Are you panicking if you're the Orioles?
No. I'm definitely not panicking. This is a playoff team. I 100% agree with you guys. They are playoff bound. I will differ, though, in the fact that because you did not bury New York, because you did not capitalize on it, I think it cost them the division this year. I think the Yankees will pull this out. A lot we're going to find out over these next few weeks, because aside from a series coming up against Cleveland, New York's got a pretty pretty easy-looking schedule, whereas Baltimore's got a juggernaut. They've probably got the toughest schedule the remainder of the way. So Baltimore, which, I mean, not a terrible way to go into the postseason. And after what happened last year, this is not a bad thing for Baltimore to have to be fighting this thing all the way through, maybe not get that division. I mean, last year proved that you don't have to win the division. You can be a wild card and win everything and go to the World Series. So it really comes down to what is Baltimore, what are you trying to do? Like, it can't be win the division. It's got to be bigger. It's got to be a bigger prize. And what you did at the deadline kind of sells us all on the fact that it is a bigger prize. So, I think Baltimore's going to be fine. They've added the pieces. The players they've had that, yes, Samantha, I mean, I agree, it hasn't been the best start. But there's just too many weapons there of, like, it's going to start coming around. It may not show itself over the next few weeks, and it may cost them the division. But at the end of the day, like, this is a playoff team. You're geared up for October now.
Yeah, and I'm by the way, I'm with you, Irby. I think New York's taking this division. I don't think the Orioles are going to come back and take this. Doesn't mean they won't end up representing the American League in the World Series. You never know, right? But sure. I do think New York is on a better path than Baltimore at the moment. And the strength of schedule stuff does start to matter at this time of year as well. So we shall see what happens.
Yep.
Now, let's talk about somebody who very famously not going to the playoffs. Has not gone to the playoffs. Will never go to the playoffs. You guessed it. It's Mike Trout. So we had an interesting comment made out of the Angels front office.
That's one way of putting it.
Which is, Mike Trout could hit 70 home runs in 2025. 70. I will spell it for you. S-E-V-E-N-T-Y. In case anyone was misunderstanding me and they thought they heard something reasonable, like 40. No, 70. 70 home runs, which is would be quite a feat for a person who has never hit 70 home runs, who is at about 50% of his peak, which, again, did not come anywhere near 70 home runs. Because, again, you know, 70 home runs, because so many people do, right? Because so many well-established power hitters in their prime hit 70 home runs. No, they do not do that. 70. Why did he do this? I mean, let's just ignore the absurdity of it and try to focus on the why would you do this? Why would you say this? Which just makes you sound like a clown. Makes Mike Trout sound like a clown. It just makes everybody roll their eyes and go, my dude, do you know how baseball works? Like, you could have said he could hit 40 next year. And you'd think, well, I find it hard to believe he will stay healthy enough to do that. But yes, that is possible. That is a possible thing that could happen. 40. 70? I mean, okay, first of all, Irby, would you take the John Cougar Mellencamp winning an Oscar 10,000-1 odds on that even?
Yeah, I mean, sure, $10. I'll do the Kevin Malone. Like, I'll put 10 on.
Yeah.
Sure. 70 home runs. Mike Trout, the bet that I would parlay there is what's more likely to happen, him hit 70 home runs next season or hit 70 more in his career?
Ooh.
I mean, he may not even get to 70.
That's a good point.
Like, I don't know. I mean, well, and Bo, like, I mean, what do you think? Well, why didn't he go for 40? Why didn't he pick 40 or 50 or 30?
Well, first of all, someone who is on this podcast once told me that you never turn down a 10,000-1 odds bet. So I would also take that. Now, why didn't he say 40? Why didn't he say, I don't know. I think the more conservative estimate would have been 25. But it's not really a surprise for me because you have to be day in and day out working in that organization. You have to have your head in the clouds to think that you would do anything that remotely resembles a 500 baseball team. Like, you have to have your head in the clouds to think that. So he's up there and he's thinking 70 home runs. His head is in the clouds. It makes you question his judgment. Frankly, it makes you question his judgment. It makes you question having him run your team when he thinks, not only does he think that Mike Trout is going to hit 70 home runs, which is absurd, but he thought well enough of it to say it publicly. I mean, that's something you just float around in the middle of a front office meeting. You know, you got Artie Moreno there and you're trying to show off. You drop that line. You don't do it to a reporter. So I question his judgment. I think it is where I'm at here. I question anyone's judgment who would make such a ridiculous claim and then not immediately try to clean it up, which he didn't do.
This feels like a good time to also mention that if this is the first time, if you heard this and you've never questioned Perry's judgment before, like, Bo absolutely has. I don't mean Bo. I just mean, you know, if this is your first go-round with Perry, this is not new. Although, I mean, let's put this out there, though, right? They're the anti-Rockies, right?
Yeah,
like, the Rockies are like, well, we'd be lucky to get to 500. That would be awesome. And these guys are going the other way. They're like full on, you know, DeLulu, as the kids say. Yeah, sure, 70 home runs for Mike Trout, right? Like, it's like you don't hear the Yankees going around and saying Aaron Judge is going to hit 70. But sure, aging, broken Mike Trout, who is a bum, according to one Matthew Irby, is going to hit 70 home runs next year. Like, you know, I'm sure Mike Trout's mom and Mike Trout's wife think that Mike Trout could hit 70 home runs next year. And that's great, right? We want to have a very, very positive support system around us personally. But when the general manager of your baseball team is saying this to a reporter, Bo, you are exactly right. The judgment, not even that he believes that, but that he said it to a reporter.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Like, it's just like saying, It's right up there with Seattle, with Jerry being like, look, man, we're just trying to win 54% of our games. like, you have fundamentally understood how this works, my dude.
Yikes. And when it first happened, I had so many questions hit my head. Like, is there a change coming to the dimensions of Angel Stadium that we don't know about? Like, are they bringing that left field wall in, like, 200 feet?
Yeah, to like 180. I was like, my reaction to this was, are you sure he said 70? That's why I spelled it out for you guys, because I'm thinking, like, did they say 17?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that seems too conservative. Like, way to get people excited. He might hit 17 home runs next year. And you're like, yeah, okay. And so might Tim Anderson if everything breaks right. But, like, 70. Wow. No wonder they don't get any better. So bad.
Ron Lawson did that too when he said that, like seven. Yeah, seven. Why do you keep asking me? I just want to make sure that we're on the same page, that you're saying 7-0.
Yeah.
Home run over the fence. Maybe a couple in the park. Although he does inside the parker, that'll probably lead to the injuries and everything. This is if Mike Trout doesn't do it, he is a bum, right? Yeah, why wouldn't you do this for? I just wonder if there was an announcement on season tickets, re-upping season tickets this week as well.
Oh, yes.
Come see
Mike Trout hit 70 home runs,
okay,
and the Angels missed the playoffs by 35 games.
If you cared about that, then why didn't you just release Rendon? That would have easily kicked up season ticket price, ticket sales.
It's true.
Just release Rendon. Instead of saying something stupid, do something smart.
Do you think someone would buy season tickets because they released Anthony Rendon? Because I 100% do. I completely agree with you.
I
think there would be at least one person who would be like, okay, I'm back in.
I promise you, there is a faction of Angels fans that are boycotting the Angels until they get rid of Rendon. I promise you they're out there.
Right? Oh, yeah.
They're just not, you know, loud about it and, you know, whatnot, but they're out there. They're out there. They have a secret code to knock on the door and everything, but they're out there.
I think it's that or bring back the Rally Monkey, right? You could sell some season tickets if you said you bring back the Rally Monkey.
You could, yeah.
So, all right. Well, and speaking of mascots, we did warn you that we might come back to this. We had a discussion about gods and demigods and mascot family trees and whatnot a couple weeks ago, and we did warn you that we might come back to this, and guess what? It's back. So I want to talk to you a little bit about mascot family trees and sort of who evolved from who, and you know, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So I'm thinking we have three main groupings in the mascot family tree of the original. So think of it like football coaches, right? This is like, we've got the Bill Walsh tree, we've got the Parcells tree, and then we have this, you know, on down. So we have, you know, branch number one is like the furries, right? The extreme fuzzies. So the fanatic, definitely the top of that one, right? He's the original of that. So there's your, you know, god in the mascot family tree on the fuzzy branch. So then we have the sort of beautiful cartoon animals branch. And I think Stomper is probably at the top of that pile, right? It's Stomper and Dinger, right? But those are the best ones. But Stomper is definitely, he's the original, you know? So he's at the top there. And then we have the humanoids. So that's probably Mr. Redlegs, who I'm going to assume has been around longer than Mr. Matt, but I did not actually look this up because I hate these things and I don't care. but that's branch three. Right. So then we, you know, and I think from there on down, you know, we have some that fit very definitively into each of those categories, you know, like the all, you know, 100% fuzzies, you know, the fanatic and slider, you know, the 100% beautiful animals, Stomper, Dinger, guys like this. And then the humanoids, which I'm not going to talk about because they creep me out. But I mean, the creepiest thing is some of the hybrids, right? We have good hybrids, like we have fuzzy and beautiful animal hybrids, like Wally and Orbit, and those work pretty well, right? We like these, you know, for the most part. They're a good mix. But then you have something truly horrifying, which is the hybrid of the fuzzy and the humanoid, which is Blooper. Terrifying. Just the worst possible mix. So I'm curious just about with you guys, like, what are your thoughts on this in general? You know, is there another branch of this that I have missed? And also, like, other than Blooper, Like, what is the most terrifying hybrid, and which two pieces did it come from? Because, like, you know, we need to pay attention to these things, because someday we will need more mascots. More mascots will be invented, the league will expand, or somebody will get sick of theirs, or somebody's one was going to get canceled, and they'll have to get a new one. So we want to know, like, what do we not breed here? Like, what is bad to cross-pollinate between mascot groupings? And also, you know, is there another branch that you feel should be separate that you'd like to discuss?
No, I mean, I think you nailed the branches. Okay. I'm trying to think, is it really, really bad to mix a humanoid with, like, the furry? I mean, you think about it.
I think that's how we got Blooper, right?
Yeah, but if it's, you could do it well, though, couldn't you? Like
well, you could.
I mean, I just think of a hairier version of Mrs. Met. Actually, maybe not.
See?
Maybe that doesn't work.
I feel like these, you just can't mix those two. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, you also couldn't mix the humanoid with like you know, like the animals. So,
well, okay, let's talk about that one. The humanoid and the beautiful animal. Do we have anything that feels like a hybrid of those two? Like, I mean, I know we have them in college sports, but do we have anything in baseball that feels like a mix of those?
I mean, technically speaking, Rangers captain, I guess, would be a merge.
Captain. Yeah, captain's a little bit of beautiful animal / humanoid.
Yeah.
That's, and no one loves Captain.
No.
I mean, he's significantly less creepy than the other ones that are a hybrid of that, but he's not good, right?
That's fair. It's just, there is a place for Rangers Captain somewhere else. It just doesn't make sense for the Rangers. Like, that's where it okay, so what, we're going back to the Rangers, the Texas Rangers riding horses? Is that what we're doing? Because that still doesn't make sense. Having a horse as your, this weird humanoid horse thing as your mascot. But I think that he would fit somewhere.
I just don't understand why they didn't just make it a horse, like a pure, beautiful animal horse. You know? Mm-hmm. Like the thing the Colts have, I love that thing. The thing that blows the party horns out its nose. Mm-hmm. You know, the bright blue horse. That thing is delightful. And he's pure, beautiful animal, right? He's not a hybrid at all. So I don't know why the Rangers didn't just, if you're going to make it a horse, just make it the beautiful animal horse, right? You don't need this weirdly realistic thing that just creeps people out. Like,
yeah.
Also, it's boring. It is like the most boring mascot.
So boring.
Like, so terrible. Boring. Terrible. Like, the Rangers are better.
Like, come on. Like, give me something that's similar to the Philly Fanatic that's got like the six shooters. Come on. I mean, that would be fun.
So you want to go pure fuzzy?
I want to go pure fuzzy, and put the fuzzy in some chaps, and some, you know, give us some six shooters and a hat and a cowboy hat. That's what I want to do. Maybe not the cowboy hat. That might be a little too much, right? But like a little six shooter fuzzy.
Yeah, no, I could get on board with that. I think maybe they just need to start over and go back to like a pure breed. You know, sometimes mutts are good, maybe not in this situation. Go back to pure breed. Go straight fuzzy. I like it. I like it. Yeah. I don't know. Irby, thoughts?
Bo, you can do the cowboy hat and a bunch of cacti whenever there's a national broadcast. And well, everybody that, thinks that's
no, let's not do that again. No.
No. Listen, if it's a cactus with a face, I quit.
Yes. I might quit too, honestly.
Are you like the spawn of the Stanford tree? Yep. Awesome. Great, I'm out. Yeah. Please get rid of Captain. I hate that. That's where I landed on this. No. What was the other question? What is it?
So two questions. One, did we get all the branches right? It's just these three, right? There's no other branch that we missed. And also, do you have any thoughts on any others that appear to be hybrids and whether it worked or not? Just any mascot that has not yet been discussed in baseball that you feel is a hybrid that either works or doesn't work. Any thoughts on that?
Like something that you would want to see, you would want to bring it to baseball?
Well, you can comment on that too, but what I'm more asking is, like, can you think of one that is a hybrid that we haven't discussed yet that is either good or bad?
What we're trying
to figure out is if it's always bad to crossbreed, right? We know you can crossbreed the fuzzies and the beautiful animals. But what we don't know is if you can crossbreed either of them with the humanoids.
No, I don't. I'm not a crossbreed humanoid because that gets too close to actually having a human dress up. Like, can you imagine the pirates if they had an actual person dress up as a pirate walking around? Unless it was Captain Jack Sparrow, that would be okay.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think the pirates, like the parrot, is just that's just beautiful animal, right? Yeah, the fact that it's wearing human accessories doesn't matter because they all wear human accessories, even the fuzzies do. You know? Yeah. So. Yeah, so the pirates were in pure beautiful animal there. Okay, so and we're all good with the fuzzy slash beautiful animal hybrid, right? Like Wally and Orbit and those. Like we like those. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it seems to me that the humanoids, which nobody likes to begin with, even in their pure form, are also something that just absolutely they don't improve by being crossbred, right? Like you know how some dogs, if they have like a bad trait, you crossbreed them with something else and it improves it. It seems to me that the humanoids, if anything, are getting worse when they get crossbred.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's like, what's it, Mariner Moose, putting him in an actual jersey.
But they all do that, though. That's just beautiful animal in a human outfit, you know? Like, it's no different than the pirate, because they all wear jerseys, right? All the beautiful animals wear jerseys.
They do? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so do the fuzzies. So, yeah, so we're saying human accessories are not enough to make it a crossbreed because they all take on human accessories as part of their shtick. Mm-hmm. And also because it's weird when they're naked, people don't like that. So, remember when we saw Stomper naked and it scarred us all, like because they wouldn't give him a jersey and he was naked and it was weird.
Yeah.
So, anyway, they do all wear clothes, or they wear half clothes, jersey and no pants. Very famously, they do not wear pants, which is even weirder now that I think about it, but you can understand the logistical problems there. But I'm just saying, like, are there any other, do we have any other crossbreeds that, do we have any that worked in that capacity? Because I can't think of any.
I can't think of any. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because all of them, like, I mean, is TC a crossbreed? I mean, they want to act like that thing is kind of human, but it just looks like a bear. It just looks like a beautiful animal. So, like, I don't know, like, it's just like the team is trying to, like, miss species it or something because they act like that thing is humanoid and it's not, it's just a bear. I don't know. Buddy, nothing?
No, I got nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing good anyway.
Really thought you guys were going to come in here and like give me an example of a crossbreed that worked and it just seems that
I don't think
we're not going to get that.
So. I don't think any of them work.
Not even amongst the secondary mascots? Like, I'm trying to think through the secondary mascots as well.
No, I think this is where we have to maybe dive into the minor leagues and back to what we've done before promoting.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could have another discussion about this, about the minor leagues, because we could see, actually, if we could find one that worked somewhere out there. Is there a humanoid slash either fuzzy, beautiful animal that did work as a minor league mascot? So, something to think on. Just what everyone wants to hear. We're going to do another segment on this. No one is excited about this, but me. I can tell by your silence.
It's going to be fun. Come on. It's going to be fun.
I'm just going to keep talking about mascots until they kick me off the mic here. So.
All right. Anything else on these mascots before we move on to Irby's three things?
No. I've said my piece. If I just explode the name, if I just interrupt one of you in mid-thought with the name of a mascot later, you'll know why.
Fully
found a crossbreed.
Fully understandable, and you know, I hope that those listening have been with us from the beginning, at least of this segment, so they can know why you're just randomly screaming a mascot's name.
I mean, I'm sure they've all heard me yell Dinger before for no good reason. So, anyway, fair warning.
Okay. All right, Irby, you're up.
I'm going to say, you didn't even have to set us up. You could have just said that you could have just yelled it out and be like, oh, that one works. So, speaking of mascots, you know, we're all Philly Fanatic fans. So, back to what, you know, Samantha, you started off. Teams that were, are we worried? Are we panicking? Those Philadelphia Phillies, man, fantastic start. This team looked like an absolute juggernaut. And with the Acuna and the Strider injuries that the Braves had, it felt kind of like Philadelphia was going to run away with this thing. And we've seen the Braves come back, and they still, it's a 6.5, as we record this, a 6.5 game lead. And Philly's at a +101 in that run differential. And sure, the Mets have gotten better, but, you know, they're not going to, it's Atlanta going after it, and I'm not entirely sure Atlanta can actually catch Philadelphia, who, despite their issues, I mean, we over the their last 22 games, they've only won 7 of their last 22. So definitely, I mean, playing, not even playing Whiteside. You're playing Oakland. You're playing Angels ball, basically. There you go. That's what you do. You're playing Angels ball lately. I get y'all's take on this. I don't think, for me, this one does not. I'm not as worried about Philadelphia as I am, say, a Baltimore that we were talking about. I think this is just one of those stretches that teams go through. And you can look at Philadelphia where, you know, we did that rotation of Wheeler and Nola at the top. And you've got Suarez, who's actually going to be coming back here pretty soon. And that 1-2-3, Suarez is having an amazing season before his little DL stint here. The bullpen, that was already solid. And then you went out and you added 3 more pieces to that at the deadline and didn't really give up anything. So for me, it's the pitching, it's the offense. But this is a Phillies offense, and it's weird because it kind of reminds me of what the Rangers did last year, where they would have games where these guys can light the scoreboard up, and then they disappear. Mm-hmm. And it's that inconsistency that we've seen from the Philadelphia offense, and it's guys at the bottom, like Real Muto, Stott, and Castellanos, who aren't producing. Now, those are 3 players that can get it together, and this entire lineup is full of players that will show up and can show up and can get the job done. So, for me, this Philadelphia, this kind of hiccup, this kind of comeback down to the metrics is exactly that. I'm not concerned about Philadelphia. I think this is just one of those things that everybody goes through. You're doing it now. This is a great time for it to happen. They're going to get better. Like I said, Suarez coming back. The offense can light the scoreboard up. I mean, even in that run, seven of their last 15 run, five of those 7 wins were by 6 or more runs. So this team can light it up. They can fall down. The inconsistencies are going to be an issue, but it's not the worst thing in the world. It feels like it's almost – I almost feel like I'm trying to find something here. Every team's got their problems. Every team's got things they got to work on. And compared to what else is out there, it feels like Philadelphia's thing is something that you're like, okay, we have something to work on. This is not the end of the world at all. These guys are going to be fine.
You know, Samantha, I wonder if how much of this is post-deadline kind of sluggishness on the part of the Phillies. Like getting used to, you know, guys getting used to new roles, guys getting used to the new teammates, that type of stuff. What do you think?
I would argue none of it because their slump started several weeks before the deadline. Uh-huh. I'm sure there's an adjustment period there. I would actually argue that probably applies more to Baltimore.
Fair.
Yeah. You know, if you look at like Rogers was terrible in his first start. Eflin was not bad, but he wasn't elite. Eloy started to come on a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, they didn't do a ton at the deadline, and their slump started well before that. So I'm not sure I think that applies to them here, although it may not be helping. They are actually coming out of it a little bit, uh-huh, I think. Uh-huh, uh-huh. You know, I mean, I know they did drop that series to Cleveland, but, you know, that was a series between the 2 best teams in baseball. Like, someone had to take 2 out of 3. It's not like they got swept. Somebody was going to win more than the other guy. Uh-huh. So I don't think that's necessarily indicative of much. And they seem to be on the come up a little bit. And I agree with Irby. I think these guys are going to be fine. They were so far ahead, and they're back. They're back now to having the best record out there. And I know that all of the teams with the quote-unquote best records at this point are struggling right now. Cleveland is struggling. Baltimore is struggling. And Philly's struggling, too. You know, New York seems to be the only one on the upswing, but they were right in there, too, and they were having a miserable time for a long time. So I think they're going to be fine. But I think it is a good sort of yardstick for, yeah, nobody can maintain that kind of tear. So, you know, for it's, I guess, a good don't panic moment for Baltimore, for Cleveland, for everybody else who is very much in the thick of it and was struggling at the moment, that like, yeah, you're going to come out of this. You know, there are slumps and then there are slumps. And when these guys slump, they're going like 500. So that's hard to call that a slump unless you've set yourself up where the standards have become so high that sooner or later you're going to crash and burn because we play 162 of these and everybody does.
You know, one thing to point out, as they're slumping, their lead is back up to 6.5. So even with their slump, they've still got that big lead back. So I agree with both of you. Like, I'm not panicking about the Phillies. I'm not even concerned about the Phillies. I think the Phillies. I'm actually at the point with the Phillies. Like, well, this is actually kind of good timing because you know they're going to come out of it, and they're going to come out of it, and they're going to play really good baseball in September, and hopefully for them it carries over into October.
Well, okay. Secondary question, mostly for Irby. Don't you think this is the best time of year to slump? Like, you don't want to do it at the beginning because sometimes it puts you in a position where your front office thinks you're out, you know, and you don't want to do it at the end because you don't want to be limping into the playoffs. Like, isn't July and the beginning of August kind of the best time to have your slump? Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. August is that ideal time where, and I'm with you guys. What's the saying? This Philadelphia team, the division, they will take this division. They will be fine. This is the, like you said, this is the best time to do this, to go through that, because everybody goes through it, no matter what. Every player, every team, that is baseball, that is the sport. So do it now, get it over with. I know that's not how it works, but have this phase, have this period, because, and it's what's tough about these guys, because I think this expectation is a lot different than most other teams, and Baltimore being one of them, where you're taking step forward, you're still building. This Phillies team was built, and the pieces were added, that it is world championship or bust. Now, I'm not saying that they are, you know, falling apart. This is the last chance. They're not going to do some kind of Florida Marlins thing. But that is what this team is built for. They are built for an October run. That's what you're looking for. Those players are there. You know, it's the crazy thing, and this is what's so difficult about baseball, is that if you just happen to have that slump in October, you'll be like Baltimore last year, 3-10. So, have it now, get this over with, work through that stuff. You know, those conversations are happening in the clubhouse of like, yeah, man, I'm seeing this, I've been doing this, now I notice you're doing that. Have those conversations. It's a great clubhouse, tons of veterans on this team. No, if they don't come out of this, if this is a kind of one and done in the postseason and this thing sputters out, I would be incredibly shocked, like Mike Trout 70 home run shock.
Okay, that might be a little far. We see this all the time. You know, the lesser team comes back and surprises somebody, or especially early when you got those short series, right? So it wouldn't shock me as much as Trout hitting 70 home runs. That's all I'm saying. Would it shock me? Yes, just, you know, at a lower level.
Yeah, well, speaking of teams that aren't going to shock you, even in the least bit.
Irby's getting better at his segue, Samantha. Have you noticed this?
I feel like these are like the most ham-fisted segues in the world, and I feel like that's my fault because I started doing it on purpose, and now it's contagious, and now I've given it to you.
Well, you know what they say, hits are contagious, but in Chicago, losing is contagious. Fortunately, Tuesday night, the Chicago White Sox won a baseball game. Normally, we don't sit here and have conversations. This isn't like the NFL where you win one a week. That's a good thing. In Chicago, that's so much lately. I'm going to throw it at you guys here as well. Is this the worst team? Is this on pace to be the worst team ever, minus the 1899 Spiders, who are still wonderfully a horrible team? But it's a two-part question of, is this on pace to be the worst team, and is that a bad thing? It's going to be weird asking that. But, yeah, so as we sit here, 28 and 88, you're at negative 247 runs. You're on pace for negative 335. Yeah, losing streak. This is my favorite thing. So they just ended their 21-game losing streak, running up there. You know, good job passing. They couldn't quite get to the 61 Phillies, but that's okay. I'm sure they'll try again. This isn't the only one. You remember they started the year 3-22. And shortly after that, they actually had a stretch from mid-May to June where they won one game in 17. So 3-22, 1-16, and now 21 straight losses. You want to know the worst thing about that? Is if you take all those streaks out, they are still playing five games under 500 ball right now.
How fortunate, Samantha, for the Cubs to have their down year when the White Sox are doing this, because no one's talking about how bad the Cubs have been lately. Everyone's talking about the White Sox in Chicago and how bad they are. And nobody's going to ever come close to the Spiders. I will die on that hill. Nobody's coming close to the Spiders. But I it's hard to imagine, Samantha, a worse baseball team than this. Like, you watch them play, you know, even when they scratch out a lead, their bullpen blows it. Except for the ninth inning, which is weird, right? Like when they have like a 4+ run lead, they don't blow that in the ninth, but they'll blow everything else. So this is your division, Samantha. You see them more up close than Irby and I do. I mean, so I'm gonna kind of slide over to you on his questions, like you know, on pace. I mean, worst team ever, or is this just a really bad year?
I don't think they're the worst team ever, mostly because we just have too many years of baseball for that, right? So think back to that Mets team, think back to that Phillies team. Like, I mean, I won't even count the Spiders because that's like kind of a different animal. That's pre World Series. Mm-hmm. But even in the World Series era, which we have, you know, more than 100 years now, are they really worse than those teams? I don't know. I doubt it. But as for, is that a bad thing? I mean, that's the more interesting piece of this to me, because I am of the opinion that if you are going to be bad, what you need to do is be good at being bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will use as an example the fact that I had way more fun watching the Browns the year they went 0-16 than any of the many, many years that they went 3-13 or 4-12. Because then you're just bad, right? There's nothing fun about it. You're just bad. But if you're like the worst thing ever, that's kind of amazing. You can lean into it and be like, hey, man, shoot the moon. Like, I don't know if you guys play hearts ever, but like, you know, if you shoot the moon, you win.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you take that queen of spades, you better be trying to take every trick from then on out. So, yeah, no, I am of the opinion that there is something delightful about being so bad that it's like historic and exceptional, and you can almost revel in that and be like, you know what, we're not good, but we're entertaining. Whereas there is nothing entertaining about being like the second worst team. Right. Then it's just miserable.
Would you, as a White Sox fan, would you have been upset that they fell just like what, two games short, Irby, of tying the Phillies and three of passing them, I think? For the longest winning, the longest losing streak.
Yeah, you're close. Well, so there's more fun ones there. Yes, that 61 Phillies team who lost 23 straight games. Those guys actually finished with a 305 win percent. Oddly enough, only -212 on their run differential. They finished 47-107 that year. So they figured it out, everything. But some of those worst ones, you guys mentioned, somebody mentioned those Mets, the 62 Mets, their inaugural year, played 250 ball. 40-120, and they had a -331. But we've seen worse lately. Oakland A's last year, though they won 50 games, they're a -339. So the White Sox have got that to shoot for. The 0-3 Tigers, remember those guys? 2003 Tigers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
43-119, -337 on there. So, yeah, it the Mets and the Tigers are really the ones. There are some others below that 250 win percentage, the 35 Boston Braves and the 1916 Philadelphia Athletics. The White Sox sit in between those two. But that is a different era of baseball as well. But it is interesting. The 1916 Philadelphia Athletics, 36-117 and a tie. So a 235 win percentage. And Chicago's ahead of that right now, but they're towing that line pretty close, because this is the team, and we'll have fun with this at the end of the year. when we were making our predictions, and I said, you know, the Chicago White Sox, everybody wins 54, everyone loses 54. The White Sox won't win 54. I should have gone all in and said, they may not finish in the 40s in wins.
Just a bad, bad year for the Pale Hose.
So the White Sox are going to win 30 less home runs, 30 less games than Mike Trout's going to hit home runs next year. That's what you're saying.
Ooh, that would be a fun number to see. Yeah.
Okay. New Trout home runs. That's what Perry should have done. He should have said Mike Trout's going to hit more home runs next year than the White Sox will win games, and I would have gone like, you know what, that might happen.
Hey, Pedro for the White Sox probably go, yeah, I'll take that action.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're Pedro at this point, you were trying to get thrown out of baseball, right? Like, please ban me for life for betting on my own team.
I kind of want him to get back that 100 more losses than wins mark and then get himself fired. Just so that he's like, I can't finish that number.
All right. What's next there, Irby?
All right, well, since there's no celebrating in Chicago, yeah, so there is some bad celebrating. No, that one's too forced and everything. So, earlier this week, we had an incident in baseball, and I say incident because we're not huge fans here of the no-hitter. It is an accomplishment. Good on you. I'm not going to jump up and down and call it a holiday or anything. But Blake Snell did throw a no-hitter this week, and he no-hit the Cincinnati Reds, which a lot of teams have done that lately. It's not that impressive sometimes. This one, maybe a little bit more. But the interesting thing about this is after the game, his teammates dunked him with, you know, the Gatorade dunking, the water dunking, which we see all the time. Unfortunately, his teammates didn't really think this one through. Normally, we see the big orange Gatorade, take the top off and dunk it. Very common. Highly recommend that. They didn't do that. They did the rectangular one where the top doesn't come off. It only folds back. So when they dunked him, the top fell back down and hit Blake in the back of the head. So good job, Giants. Luckily, no injury. Nothing from Blake Snell, no concussion protocol or anything like that. But got me thinking of some of the worst celebrations. So I have four here for you guys to remember, and then I would love to, if y'all have some others of these times that nope, that did not pay off. And the first one is the 92 NL pennant. The Atlanta Braves won the pennant in 92, and Deion Sanders was very upset with a one Tim McCarver, who was a little critical of the Braves that year, almost to the point that they felt like he was rooting against them. And Deion, after winning the pennant, dunked McCarver, not once celebrating, not twice, but three different times. And it's one, it's kind of funny, hey, he gave you a hard time, but by that third time, it definitely was getting a little awkward of like, what's going on here? Another that just falls in perfectly. On May 29th of 2010, Kendrys Morales hits a walk-off grand slam for the Angels, and they beat the Mariners. And celebrating, landing on home plate, Kendrys fractures his leg. But that's not it. That's not it. He fractures his leg, misses the rest of the season. In pure Angels fashion, they rushed him back next year from the rehab, and guess what? He re-injured his knee and missed 2 seasons. Good job, Angels. Never change. The other ones that kind of jump into the NFL, you guys remember the Gus Frost headbutting the wall? Mm-hmm. November of 97.
Yep. That's a classic.
Sprained neck. That's missing the remainder of the game.
That's a classic.
Don't headbutt the ball. And then the ultimate is the Martin Gramatica tearing his ACL on a 43-yard field goal. It didn't win the game. But it did give the Cardinals a 3-0 lead in the first quarter.
I don't know which of those is worse, Samantha, the celebrating a meaningless kick or the headbutt by Farrah. Which one's worse?
I think it's celebrating the meaningless kick. At least with the other one, you can say I'm an idiot. I got caught up in the moment. Like, what is your excuse for getting caught up in the moment when the score is 3-0? Really, man? Friggin' kickers, man. Kickers. That's a great list. The Kendrys Morales one is the one that really just, like, lives in my head forever. When you say bad baseball celebration, that's immediately where I go. And then, of course, Edwin Diaz. But, you know, another one that I would like to throw out there for you. Leon Lett.
Yes.
Ooh.
I mean, if there's a football play that I think about more than any other play in the history of, like, things I have, like, witnessed, it is that. I mean, I don't remember anything else about it. We were really little kids when that happened, but, like, I can see that entire play perfectly in my mind, and I will see it forever. Just little Don Beebe going up and stripping that football away from Leon Lett. I mean, that one just, like, the number of times that I think about that in a given week just for no reason is, like, definitely higher than 3.
Like, he actually became known for bonehead things like that, right? Because the next year was the Dolphins-Cowboys game on Thanksgiving where he went after the ball it was a snow sleet mix.
Okay, and isn't it just like a bit at that point? Then it's like doing a bit. Did you do this on purpose? Are you just trying to be that guy? Like, and that's part of the problem with this too, right? Like, Irby, like the Deion Sanders one that you were pointing out, it's like, this is something that really, really bugs me with these, like, the number of times when somebody doesn't know when to stop, where it's like, and it's always somebody who wants to dunk on the haters. And it's like Aaron Rodgers syndrome, right? This, I have a chip on the shoulder for the rest of my life because of something that happened with college recruiting. And it doesn't matter how many MVPs I win or whether I'm a Hall of Famer or whether I win a Super Bowl, I'm forever going to act like I'm a victim because 20 years ago, somebody was like, we don't know if you're going to make a great college football player. And then they just never stop trying to dunk on whoever this person is. It's just like, you get one. And you have to stop. We're seeing it with the Olympic athletes now. I've seen a couple of them do it. It's like, no, you get one, and you have to stop.
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys, how about y'all? Do y'all have any that you remember in your youth or people you played with as well or a teammate that you're like, what are you doing? We haven't won anything yet, aside from, you know, Bo, your extensive career of, you know, power walking, speed walking.
I can think of one that I did. Me personally, I did this. I did this. This is middle school football. And I'm guard. I'm playing. I think it was right guard. Remember correctly. And we were just destroying this team. I mean, it was laughable at this point in the game. Like, we're just killing them. And we had this one play, and they called a running play. This is one I didn't have to pull on, which I was thankful for. Because I'd been pulling all day. I was like, just run it straight. We're killing them. And that's what we did. Small problem. When the quarterback handed the ball off and I started blocking, I didn't exactly stop at that at the line. I kept going. I'm sorry, it wasn't a running play, it was a passing play. My bad, it was a passing play. And I kept going. So instead of dropping back and pass block, I kept going. So I was an illegible player downfield.
Just a little too far downfield.
And I was celebrating the touchdown because I'm watching it like, cool. And I look over, the coach is giving me the riot act. I'm like, what? And then I remember that it was a passing play and not a running play. My bad. My fault.
Oh, boy. I don't think I was ever on a team where something like this happened. Certainly not in track, both high school and college track. I was definitely on a team where you were taught, like, no, you celebrate when the meet is over. You don't even celebrate after the race. You're not allowed. However, I did witness several times somebody with a significant lead in cross country who decided to do a cartwheel into the chute, which you shouldn't do because that's just like a dickhead thing to do, right? But I did see somebody do it once who got their comeuppance because he fell before he crossed the line and somebody came up and passed him, stepped right on over him.
Golly. Yeah, that's pretty rough. I'm kind of from the same. Like, I'm from the George Seifert era. Like, I'll smile when we've won something, not as we're winning. So not many of those. But I did have teammates sophomore year of high school, 7-run lead in the regional semifinals in baseball, and proceeded to see 5 errors in the last of the inning, and they blow a 7-run lead. Wonderful moment. One of the assistant coaches grabbed all of us, like, kids that had got called up, pulled us aside, and just, like, burned it in our memory of, like, y'all remember this.
Yes, yes.
Y'all remember this. Like, this is, and that was, it always stuck with me of the beauty of baseball, 27 outs, or I guess in high school, 21 outs, but whatever, same thing. You got to get them all.
I may or may not have played, while I was playing third base, forgot how many outs were in an inning. I did do that.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Fielded that grounder, tossed it over to first. I was like, good play, Bo. That's 3 outs and ups, too.
Yeah. Hey, I've done the opposite, too, where you turn the double play. And like, what are you doing? Turn double play. There's 2 outs.
See, that's my favorite one right there.
I got 4. Shut up.
Does that out carry over to the next inning? Because it should.
Yeah.
You start the next inning with 1 out. Deal with it. Actually, we shouldn't say that out loud because Manfred might go for that.
Oh, God. The 4th out carryover. Can't you just see it? Here's another way we can speed up the game. If you complete a double play on the 3rd out, it shows up as an out in the next. Oh, just let me die. Oh, my gosh. Oh, no. Should we edit this out of the show just on the off chance that Rob Manfred accidentally stumbles onto it and is like, there it is?
We're not talking about Major League Baseball, Rob. We're talking about the Finnish one, that Finnish baseball. There, you can do it.
Oh, Pasapallo.
Swedish
baseball? Yeah, Pasapallo.
Swedish, yeah. That's what we meant. That's what we were talking about. Yep, totally. That's what we meant.
Oh, man, now I'm nervous. All right, nobody say anything. No more ideas, guys. No more ideas. Don't help him.
Oh, boy. All right. Are we anything else on these celebrations, or should we just move on?
Let's move on before we get ourselves in trouble.
Let's move on before we have before we're accessories and killing baseball. All right, let's go out to the National League West, which is suddenly, Samantha, an interesting race. The Diamondbacks, as we are recording this, have crawled all the way back to 3.5 games out. How concerned should the Dodgers be right now?
I mean, as the team that just got swept by them, I hope it's very concerned. I hope they're way better. I thought they were because it'll make me feel better personally. But, I don't know. I mean, the Dodgers have played this season a little bit, I guess I would say, complacently, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think you can do that. And there's an argument that you should do that after what we saw happen to Atlanta and the Dodgers last year, that maybe it is a little bit better to maintain a steady, smaller lead than to burn it through the regular season, right? But like, okay, so I guess the question then is, what is the point where you, what point do you panic? Where do you panic? Like, how close do they have to get to you before you go, oh my gosh, we have a real problem here? Like, I think it's 3 games. Like, yeah. I'm in close to panic mode right now because Minnesota's creeping up on Cleveland. 3 games is like, that's the panic point where you feel like they could really do this. Is it? Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be nervous. I think they should be nervous.
I think three because if you think about it this way, 3 games, a bad series, you're tied head-to-head.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
Right?
That's why.
Or in a 4-game series, you get swept, you're down a game. So, yeah, I think 3. I think 3 is a good number, which the Diamondbacks are sitting at 3.5, and the Padres are 4. All of a sudden, we've got a race in the West that we rode off months ago.
Ah. I mean, it's interesting, right? I mean, somebody's probably going to fall out of this. But, like, I don't know if you're the Dodgers, if you can count on 2 somebody's falling out of this, or do the Dodgers just go, okay, we'll put the foot on the gas now? I don't know.
Yeah, right, and that's a good point, right? Like, if you're facing one team, okay. They've been hot the last month. They'll cool off. 2? That's where it gets dicey. I agree with you 100%. That's a good point. Irby, how about you? Where are you at on this?
I'm loving this race of getting Arizona back in, because it is, we kind of, you know, we did believe that this was a solid team, that this was a good team. Going into Cleveland sweeping there, I didn't see that coming. But I mean, this is a good Arizona team, and I'm glad they're back in the fight. We saw what the Padres did at the trade deadline. Anything and everything to get themselves right into this. So, yeah, I like the three number we all are saying there. That's good. The Dodgers have the schedule. Unfortunately, the thing about the schedule is these guys all played each other a lot already. They each have one series left against each other, but that's it. We don't have any of the, like, 10 games left against each other, unfortunately. Too much of everybody. The good thing for all of them is they each have each of them have two series left of Colorado. So lots of W's still to come here from both of these teams. The good thing for the Dodgers is how that finishes up. That Arizona and San Diego will finish up playing each other while the Dodgers play Colorado. So just keep yourself in the lead and you should be good there in the end. But yes, I love this theory. I love this race. Both because of what Arizona and San Diego can do. Complacency, Samantha, is perfect. Like, that's exactly what this is. This is, the Dodgers have kind of felt like this was their division all along. And here we go. You're in a fight now. Which, compared to some years, might not be a bad thing for the Dodgers going into October.
Yep. Samantha, anything you want to add there?
No, I'm good.
Okay, so next on the list here, Ben Joyce tossed a 104.7-mile-an-hour heater last week. Was it last week? It was last week. I mean, obviously, you know, we've talked extensively about the arm and injuries and this and that, so I'm not looking to do that with you guys, but Samantha, I think I want to talk about this in this context of, where does it end? How fast can a human physically throw a baseball? Because we keep seeing these numbers and they keep going up. Like, this was the fastest since 08 when they first started measuring strikeouts. The fastest strikeout pitch, I'm sorry, since 08. Since they started measuring in 08. But, like, it's... where does it stop? Is it 105? Is it 106? Are we going to reach the absurdity that was the movie The Scout, where Brendan Fraser was throwing like 130 miles an hour? Are we going to reach that? Like, where does this end?
You know, it's interesting because I wonder, like, ultimately you have to assume that people will continue to make advances in terms of efficiency, training, technology accompanying that will allow people to continue to up the ante. But what we've seen over the last, I don't know, let's say 30 years, with the increase in harder throwing, the stress on the arm, like, is there a point, I know we said we weren't talking about this in an injury capacity, but like, is there a point where they don't want you to throw that hard because you're almost guaranteed to blow out your arm? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you can argue that we're there already, that it's not efficient to throw even as hard as what we're seeing right now. But if we're just talking about, like, what's possible, like, what is a human capable of? I mean, I did read a weird book a couple of years ago about these baseball players who had, like, cyborg parts. Called The Resistors by Gishon. Weird book, highly recommend it, very strange, where you could get, like, an add-on. So you could become like a cyborg baseball player and you could like throw really hard, or you could have like better than perfect vision or what have you. But like, outside of something like that, right? Assuming the technology does not allow us to have like a robot arm, or that we would just wouldn't allow people to do it, even if they could, then like, where does the human arm top out? I don't know, like 120? Yeah. The 130 feels just like completely absurd, and 120 probably is too, right? But like, if we can say, okay, it's very reasonable to say somebody could hit 110 or about 115, like, I don't know where you cut it off. Like, I just can't fathom somebody throwing harder than 120.
I can't imagine somebody firing faster than 104.7, but we keep seeing little ticks up, little ticks up. And
yeah.
At one point, I mean, can you imagine when we were kids? I know I did it on the play. Yeah, I just threw 105 mile an hour fastball, thinking that was impossible. Well, 104.7 is pretty damn close to 105, right? Like, I don't know what it is. I mean, pitchers have always used their legs. Is it the fact that legs are stronger now? Is it the fact that athletes are stronger now? Yes, but where does it end? Irby, what about you? Like, you were a catcher. Help me out here. What do you think?
Well, I just gotta catch the thing. It's fine. I don't care.
How would a 104.7 feel on the catcher? Let's start there.
It hurts. Yeah, but at some point you're just dead. I mean, I think I've got a permanent like baseball size shape in my left palm. it's always there. I mean, yeah, catch it in the webbing, make it easier on yourself. Don't catch it on the palm. Been there, done that. I agree with you guys. I think that 110 number is a number that is achievable. I will go back to the same question I asked when we talked about, you know, the Angels bringing back Mike Trout. Why? Why do you need to get there? Because, yes, you're going to hit a number, and it's going to be amazing. This guy's, yay, high five, everything. Well, don't high five this arm because it came out of socket, all of the sockets. Because it's just not – the body's not meant for that. And I say that knowing that, and it kind of goes back to what we said with the Olympics where, you know, we see world records and Olympic records and boom, 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 boom. And you think at some point you have to reach a point where the body can't handle it anymore. And in many sports, you know, we constantly see those numbers improving. You know, we track this year at the Olympics, not as many world records have been broken. We're getting that point. Same with swimming. Didn't have any. I think we only had one or two world records. You're getting to that point where you can't go much more. The NFL has definitely seen it where, I mean, bigger, faster, stronger. It's like, okay, the bones don't get stronger. Same thing here with the arm. Like, you can get to a point where you can use your legs and use the mechanics and you can use the arm. And I'll put that all together and train your entire youth and adult life to this point of throwing 110 miles an hour. And you will accomplish it. But then what happens? What are the ramifications? What are all the negative things that are going to come with this? Like all the arm injuries, the pressure, the stress on it, all the issues that you are going to have after you retire, after you're done with your career, you know, where you just have arm injuries and aches and stuff like that. And that's all aside from the fact that you have to ask the question too. Cool. Did you throw a strike?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we're getting a lot of these are not strikes. I know this one was, but I'm more of a movement guy over just pure velocity. I know it works.
Mm-hmm.
Mason Miller is, you know, when he's not punching things, he's having a great job doing that. But I'm a movement over pure velocity guy.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. Samantha, anything you want to add there?
Sure. Just this whole I don't know where it's going to go thing. That's the biggest thing, right? It's like, at what point do you tip over where you literally can't control it? Because, like, I mean, I'm sure you guys, I've done this. I'm sure you guys have too. You have somebody put a gun on you because you want to know how hard you could throw, right? So, like, I can throw pretty hard for, like, a small girl, but I have no control over where that thing goes if I throw that hard. Like, none. Absolutely none. There is a chance it's going to land 20 feet from the plate, right? So, like, at what point does even a major league pitcher trying to do that lose the ability to have any kind of control over where that thing goes? And now I come back to you, Irby, asking you as a catcher. I mean, do you want to deal with that? Is it worth it for somebody who might be able to just blow one right by somebody if you're chasing a wild pitch every other throw?
Yeah, no, it's, well, I mean, one, I have to immediately bring in the Crash Davis thing. I would love that situation. Look at the batter and go, I have no idea where this is going. Swear to God, man. I have no idea where it's going.
This one might be a chip head.
Yeah. Seriously, I have no clue. I would, and here's the thing, it's what gets lost of for so long pitching. It's why pitchers could go longer and longer. So they didn't rear back and fire every time. I mean, that was Nolan Ryan. He, in the moment he needed it, he reared back, he found a little bit more and gave that little bit of oomph. When it's over and over and over again, it's putting too much stress. I would be fine if you have a pitcher where it's almost like, yeah, he throws a 96 fastball, but when he needs to, he can touch 105 and he can rear back and fire this one, but he's sitting at 96 with movement and control. And then every once in a while, it's like, yeah, let's try it. Let's do the suit. And I can already hear him, the super fastball. But, okay.
No, the death ball or whatever that
the
was.
The death ball.
No, yeah. No, make it stop. Oh,
yeah,
no.
The flamethrower. Yeah, no. That's the issue. I don't have a problem with the velocity. I'm a movement or velocity. It's the fact that it's over and over and over and over. And it's the body's not meant for that. This is the arm injury. This is the, I mean, we can go through every single sport has got that type of repetitive motion that an athlete has. And if you keep doing it, you keep going back to that well. If you keep dipping into that well, eventually it runs dry. And I love what Mason Miller's able to do, what Ben Joyce can do. It's entertaining. I just don't think it's sustainable. Now, there will be the freak athlete that comes through that it is sustainable. But for the 99% other, it's not.
All right. Anything else on this one, guys?
No.
No? Irby?
My hand's hurting. I'm good. Just thinking of it.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, one last piece of business before we go. It's time to assign the Rockies a president. Now, this one was a little bit of a challenge for me because I had to find a president who was satisfied with 500 and didn't make it. Which is really difficult because, you know, you think about the job as president of the United States, that there's a lot of ambition that goes with that position, right? A lot of ambition. I did find one. I found one. Martin Van Buren. Not a name you hear often for a reason. He's elected. He spent his entire 4 years pandering. He was really the first panderer in office. Spent his entire time pandering because all he cared about was re-election, because this was back when there were no term limits. He didn't want to be known as a former president. So he just wanted re-election and got his ass handed to him right out of the gate. The first re-election campaign that came up, got his ass handed to him. That to me screams Rockies who only care about being 500 and fall incredibly short year in and year out. Samantha, any thoughts here?
I mean, okay, so yeah, so we're looking at 500 as the traditional two-term thing, right? Even though there were no term limits, which he aimed for and did not get, right?
Right, yes.
So yeah, if you go by those standards, then yeah, 100% Rockies, right? So he wanted, you're not putting on a good show in the 50% of the way that you make it, right? And I guess technically, to be fair, he did better than the Rockies because he did make it halfway there, right? Like, he did make it through his first tenure. So technically, he did better than they did, which is really sad. but, like, was it a good performance? I mean, you could make the case that they're comparable because the performance in the first half was so poor, right? Because he didn't really do anything because he was only worried about the next one. I mean, in this way, you could also argue that he is at once the Rockies, and possibly also the Mariners, because it's don't worry, it'll make sense later. He could be both.
That's valid.
Can you imagine a Rockies-Mariners hybrid? Just picture that front office.
Oh, my God. I just did, and now I'm gonna laugh for the rest. I'm gonna laugh for the rest of the show this week. Irby, how about you?
I'm loving the idea of the Rockies aspiring to be Martin Van Buren. That seems very Rockies like everyone else is like, what do you want to be as a president? George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, something like that. The Rockies are like Martin Van Buren. Telling you, that's what I want to be, Martin Van Buren. What? Why would you pick somebody else? It's just Martin. That's us. That is. I'll never get there, never going to be able to do what he could do. but maybe one day. Maybe one day. One can dream. One can dream.
Oh, boy. All right. Samantha, anything else you want to add here before we call it a week?
I mean, that's just an incredible way to phrase it, right? Like, if you think about it, if you were an aspiring American president and somebody was like, who do you want to be? And I think most of us would be like George Washington, right? Like John F. Kennedy, Abraham Lincoln. Like, there's a decent list of people you could pick from, you know, who you'd be like, okay, yeah, no, that guy did a good job. And the Rockies would be like, Martin Van Buren. And half of us would be like, wait, which one was he? Like, and why? And you're not going to make it. That's the best part. We are shooting for Martin Van Buren, and we did not get
there. We can't even get to there.
Incredible, Arby. Absolutely incredible. Hold on. Oh my god, poor Dinger, we have to airlift him out. It's an emergency. This is where I'm going to yell about the mascot. Dinger, I need to save you. This isn't right. I don't want you to have to be Martin Van Buren. I deserve better.
Oh boy. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Wherever you listen to the Lollygagging Sports, give us a like, subscribe to the show, help us out with that algorithm so we can get some lollygaggers in here. But until next time, we're out of here. Watch some baseball. It's good for you.